sanity for a change. The Rick Smith Show.
I've been knocking on the door that holds the throne. I've been looking for the map that leads me home. I've been stumbling on.
Website, RickSmithShow.com. So another one of those moments where you go, exactly what is it about this administration that is anywhere worthwhile? Look, you may remember during the campaign, we're going to appoint the best, the brightest. We're only going to get the good people to come run our government. It's going to be terrific. It's going to be tremendous. We're going to have great people. It's going to be great, right? Remember that? Here's the thing. The latest bit of news, and it's just mind-blowing. There is a department in the U.S. Department of Education that heads up science. You know, you would want somebody, in fact, by law, by rule, it has to be someone who comes from among distinguished scientists. So you would think someone with a science background, you know, maybe high school chemistry. I don't know. Maybe that's who you should pick. Well, the president has nominated or is going to nominate a longtime campaign ad and a talk radio host, guy who has an MBA, guy named Sam Clovis. He's going to now head up science at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Yeah. Again, you know, Tea Party guy, science denier. Let's head up science. Crazy, crazy stuff. Now, over the weekend, you saw the Twitter tantrum and the attack on the Republicans. He tweeted out, "It's very sad that Republicans, even some that we carried over the line on my back, do very little to protect the president." And I couldn't help but think the president is now doing the victim thing, playing the victim card. Poor Donald. That's why I've asked our good friend Propane Jane to come talk with us. Explain, what is it about the victim card? What is it about this administration that, well, just seems even crazier by the day? Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
So you've got the, I don't know if you saw it, but over the weekend, the victim card. Oh, my God, everybody against him.
Yeah, he's having a terrible week. Of course he's the victim.
It doesn't have to do anything with the things that he's done and the insanity that's ensued. I mean, honestly, I mean, wow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, much of what is happening right now is Trump is feeling very terrible on the inside. And no matter what he is putting forth, you know, to the public, you know, the face that he's putting forward, that's basically like the complete opposite of what he's actually feeling internally. And these have been just a very bad last few weeks. The weeks continue to get worse as time goes on. And this is a man who wants to live in a world where he's always viewed as competent. He's always viewed as popular. He's always viewed as wealthy, and so everything that's happening is like a refutation of that. I think what he's doing is he really does feel like a victim, even though we can sort of, you know, go, okay, he's not. He's actually the one that, you know, is sabotaging his own self, and is actually going out and attacking all these other people. Even though we can see that, we are not really in the mind of, you know, instability in chief. And for him, he really feels aggrieved, and he genuinely is upset because he feels like people are getting the wrong impression of him, and that people are vilifying him unnecessarily, and it's just very difficult to break through his level of persecutory delusion, because that's something that he has been practicing for all of his life. I mean, yeah. 71 years at this point.
Yeah, I mean, are you surprised? I mean, because, you know, what we're seeing in the White House is major chaos. I mean, all of the news coming out, you had Spice Boy who resigned on Friday. So you're not going to have Spicy to kick around anymore. And we hear now that Tillerson's thinking about going because of what Trump did to Sessions. And you know, Sessions is possibly going to be going because he's now beleaguered, I guess. Uh-huh. I mean, just all of this craziness.
Uh-huh. And, you know, a couple of months ago, we which again seems like ages, we discussed this idea of, you know, being under Trump's thumb and how it's basically a war of attrition. You know, after a while, even his most diehard supporters become fatigued. It is very difficult to maintain this level of denial of reality when you don't also have the same disorder that Trump has. I mean, they are working for him, and of course their job is to go out and be a spokesperson for him. But what he is thinking and the message that he wants to convey to the public is not rational. And so you have people who, you know, by all outward appearances, have some level of rationality, which is why they are hiding. I mean, which is why, you know, Sean Spicer was hiding in the bushes. It's why, you know, leading up to his resignation, he was avoiding these press briefings. You know, the press briefings were becoming more and more delayed. You know, it was 10 minutes you had to wait, then 15 minutes, then, you know, now they can't, you know, record them. And so, I think after a while, people just are getting tired of having to defend the indefensible. And I think, you know, his top lawyer obviously has now stepped aside. And is taking a smaller role. Now, some of that may have something to do with, you know, his email rant that he sent out. You know, even the spokesperson for Trump's legal team has now stepped aside. And so I think that's just a direct result of, you know, just them being unable to maintain this level of grandiosity and paranoia.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't know that I couldn't work for it because, you know, every minute of the day you're worried about, is it my turn to get thrown on the under the bus?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I look at Sessions. I mean, it's just mind-blowing to me that he would do, that Trump would do what he did. And there's a part of me that goes, I don't even think he knows what he's done is wrong. And that's a scary thing.
Yeah, yeah. You know, my article that I wrote a couple of weeks back is called The Narcissist Who Cried Wolf. And it's basically just an exploration of the phenomenon of narcissistic injury and narcissistic rage. And what we know about it is that, you know, for those of us, again, who do not have this disorder, what they do in their rage appears incoherent. It appears unjust. It appears irrational. But for him on the inside, it feels good because he is turning himself from victimization to now he's become an aggressor and he's righting a wrong. And so none of these people really mean anything to him, you know, at a basic sort of like, you know, intimate level of interpersonal relations. He doesn't have any loyalty to them, even though they are trying to be very loyal to him. And so I do think that that's why you see people like Sessions, for instance, who obviously came out of the gates like, hey, this is my guy. I'm 100% behind him. We're going to make America great again together. But again, Trump is so incensed by the idea that Sessions would claim some element of wrongdoing and by recusing himself. And it really doesn't matter to him that Sessions is actually helping him further his agenda. He's actually the most successful at this point at furthering that agenda.
Yep.
At the Department of Justice. But Trump just can't, you know, in the midst of all of these allegations and in the midst of this investigation, he sees Sessions as, you know, he fell out of the ranks. And he basically flipped by admitting that he did something wrong. And he just can't tolerate that. You know, it really is like a mafia.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you bring up the mafia because I look at the guy that he made his communications director and you go, you know, Sarkamucci, how do you not think, you know, Goodfellas or how do you not think Sopranos with that guy?
Yeah, but even then, you know, it's so tenuous because, you know, Scaramucci is on record, you know, having called Donald Trump a hack politician.
But I don't know if you saw the tweet yesterday. Full transparency. He's deleting all of his tweets.
Right. It is like, okay, maybe that works for Trump. You know, maybe because Trump thinks that just because on the public record he has now deleted these tweets, and that somehow that is like the sacrifice that he needed to bring to the altar to prove his loyalty to Trump was, hey, I deleted these tweets because, you know, Twitter means everything to Trump. And maybe that will suffice for him momentarily. But the problem for Scaramucci is that any given day that he goes out there and does not convey the message that is 100% in line with how Donald Trump feels internally, he is also subject to being thrown under the bus. And in particular, because Trump is looking at him like, hey, I know what you said about me back in the day. Trump never forgets those things. He never forgets those slights. And so he keeps people around him on a very short leash. And again, that is why it becomes exhausting over time, and that is why you see people just completely throwing their hands up and disassociating themselves from the whole administration. Yeah. And that's also why the only people who are hanging on so tightly are his family and his children. Because, again, inheritance, because, again, blood, and because, again, the brand of Donald Trump, and they stand to actually gain financially and, you know, in some ways emotionally from that, you know, codependency with him.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, you look at it, and it's not a matter of if they're going to throw him under the bus. It's just a matter of when.
Right, exactly.
And just a side note, deleting all of your tweets, that is not full transparency.
Of course it isn't. Of course it isn't. I mean, can he be fully transparent and explain why he voted for Obama, voted for Mitt Romney, and then now all of a sudden is on Team Trump and is going to be the main messenger for Team Trump? Can any of these people, I mean, I just said Mitt Romney, can Mitt Romney explain himself? Can any of the 2016 GOP primary opponents explain themselves? Because they spent, you know, almost 2 years in their primary, you know, telling the truth about how toxic Donald Trump was and how bad he would be for the country. And now it's like a hush fell over the crowd.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Jeb just came out this weekend and said something.
Oh, it took him long enough, right? It's been 6 months.
Yeah. But still, I mean, better late than never, I guess. And look, I mean, you know, in their defense, not even they could have imagined just how bad this guy was going to be. I mean, look, I've said it before. I knew it was going to be bad. I didn't think it was going to be this bad.
Oh, I thought it was going to be terrible. I thought it was going to be terrible. And what I
agree.
Also
I agree. A terrible. I thought it was going to be. This exceeded my expectations.
Oh, good. well, for starters, I think, you know, people have a tendency to, I think, forget things that are hurtful. And someone like Jeb in particular, I think, is a great example, because Trump spent most of his time, before he, you know, got to the general and really started attacking Hillary, Jeb was his favorite punching bag. And he said some of the most terrible things he could possibly say about Jeb Bush. So if anyone could have gotten out of the gate on January 20th and said, told you so, told you this guy was crass, I told you this guy wasn't going to behave, I told you he was a jerk, you know, I told you he doesn't have any respect for the office. And he would be a credible source at that point, because we saw how he talked about Jeb. And so I do think that in particular, people in the Republican Party are forgetting a lot of the ways that Trump even mistreats them. When you look at Dean Heller and you look at these representatives, Jeff Flake in Arizona, so many Republicans are now going to be targeted by Trump's, you know, lackeys, because they are not loyal enough to him, to Donald Trump. And it no longer is about loyalty even to the Republican platform, because Trump isn't loyal to the Republican platform. He doesn't even know what it is.
Right. But, you know, here's the thing. This is part of that messaging, because I can't tell you how many conversations I've had with Trump supporters who go, he's not a Democrat or a Republican. He's his own man because he's rich and he can do what he wants, and he cares about the working guy. And that's why everybody hates him, because he doesn't identify with either. And, you know, look, they've done a great job of pushing that message while taking some of the worst Republican ideological legislation and trying to move it.
But I also think that that what Trump is finding out, and also what the Republican Party is finding out, is that that lack of loyalty to the party platform is also why they have been unable to get their legislative agenda off the ground. There are certain rules, there are certain, you know, ways of doing things in the halls of Congress that really are, you know, based in you having to have some knowledge of the institution and how it works. And this is why Trump is not able to actually get his own stuff through when he controls all three branches of government. And behind the scenes, you have these members of Congress, you know, you have the Freedom Caucus. You have these representatives who are quietly whispering under their breath that they're very disappointed in Trump because he's not courting them, because he's not going to them and, again, like we said, whipping votes in the ways that, you know, somebody like John Boehner appreciated. And so now what you have is Paul Ryan, who, again, you know, I think has some understanding of how the process is supposed to actually work and how they're supposed to actually get their agenda passed. But the problem is that as a president, as the leader of the party, Trump is not doing any of the legwork to actually move this stuff over the finish line. And that is why it's just not working.
Yeah, well, it shows, you know, another reason why you can't, you know, have some idiot off the street, you know, running anything. I mean, look, you know, it may sound great. You know, we want an average person, you know, everyday person to be in there running the White House. Well, you know what? They don't really have the skills. I mean, it's like saying, you know, I'd like a guy who read a book on brain surgery to come perform brain surgery. It's just kind of dumb.
Yeah, and what I will say is that, unfortunately, that has become, I think, a very pervasive mindset in our society right now. I think, you know, for all the good that has come from technological advances, at the same time, you know, people think that because they have a smartphone and they can Google things and they can get on the internet, that they are now an expert at something.
Yep.
And you know, and I could tell you, I could talk about, I mean, we could do, you know, 8 podcasts about this. I mean, just as a physician, I have no shortage of patients that come in and tell me they have to have a certain medication because they saw the commercial on television.
Isn't that brilliant?
Or because they WebMD'd themselves and they're convinced that they have X, Y, and Z thing, and are not really valuing the fact that I've spent, you know, over half of my life, you know, half of my life doing this thing and training and learning this science. And I do think that is why, you know, you have this Joe Sixpack mentality that's sending people to Washington who are completely removing all of the experts from our government agencies and just letting ideologues and, you know, corporatists get in there so that they can further their own personal interests.
And I think, you know, the planned appointment of Sam Clovis is a perfect example of that.
Mm-hmm.
Put a guy to even consider a guy who was a, you know, just a radical right wing Tea Party talk show host who has an MBA as the head of the science portion of the Department of Agriculture is just glaringly stupid.
And right now, I'm telling you, in the state of Texas, we have a school board that is putting those beliefs in terms of, you know, just revisionism of American history, in terms of, you know, climate change denial, all of these things, they're putting those beliefs right into the textbooks.
I know, and as Texas is screwing it up, the rest of the country gets it, because evidently Texas drives the curriculum in most of these textbooks because they buy so many of them.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you have a state so large that has that much of an influence, and then you have a political party within that state that is sending people like Ted Cruz to D.C. who's making amendments to the health care bill that are so terrible that even Republican members of Congress added a clause to exempt their own family and themselves from that provision that yep. Ted Cruz put in there.
Yeah, I mean, it's mind-blowing. But here's the other question. I mean, because you look at this and there seems to be, it's very pervasive through the Republican Party, and there are even some Democrats who have this love of know-nothing, kind of like a know-nothing love affair.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the dumber we are, the more jingoistic, the more easily misled we are, mm-hmm. the better things are going to be. And as I play the clip all the time, you know, Donald Trump loves the poorly educated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, what is it about us now? Because I remember at a time, and maybe I'm just getting old, but I remember a time where you looked at somebody who had knowledge, had experience, and you looked to them for guidance and advice. Today, it's like we mock those people.
Right, right. But I think that if you are in a position where you are unable to be educated and you are unable to be what they call an elite, because, you know, now some of the elite is, yes, money. But a lot of what they're meaning when they call people elite is that they're educated, that they had the opportunity to obtain a higher education. And that has created a separate class of people who are able to have more economic opportunity and are able to actually thrive and achieve the American dream. And so all of the people who are now left behind in our society who are poorly educated. I mean, because, again, he wasn't wrong. I mean, a lot of these people are poorly educated, and they don't like the fact that someone smarter than them is trying to tell them anything about anything. And so there is a validation and an affirmation of know-nothingism or idiocracy because it makes, I think, a lot of people who aren't very well educated still feel valuable and still feel like they can make decisions and that the country can be formed in their image, too.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, and I tell my kids this all the time. Like, I have some education. You know, I went through school, got a master's degree. But I know that there's more that I don't know that I actually know. And I love asking people, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you think you know? Anybody who says more than 0.001, I dismiss, because there's so much to know. How can you know? How can you possibly know everything?
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, you know, myself, you know, I'm an MD. I have a master's in public health. But even I am like, I want my president to be way smarter than me. Like, I want my president to have gained some mastery of way more, you know, industry and way more philosophy and way more just information than what I have been able to do. And if they haven't, to be able to hire and you know, surround themselves with people who have, the best and the brightest. And so it's really, I think, an oxymoron that he even says that, you know, that he has surrounded himself with all of these high quality people, quote unquote, because, you know, he is ultimately calling them high quality because they share his same visceral, you know, ideology in terms of the bigotry and the sexism and the sociopathy, not so much that they know what they're talking about.
Yeah, they're all yes men.
Exactly. Right.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's the criteria. Were you loyal to me during the campaign?
Right.
Did you bow down and kiss the ring? Look, you know, again, I'm with you. I want a president who's going to be more articulate, be able to string together, oh, I don't know, at least one complete sentence.
Right.
I mean, you know, I look at this and maybe this is a mirror of who we've become. And the question is how do we turn that around? You know, is there a way that you know, we have a moment of self-examination and go, as a country, there's a number of us who are being left behind. How do we pull that around?
You know, I honestly think that we have lost so much in terms of our mainstream media, you know, that it really has become so much infotainment and, like, reality TV, as opposed to actually, you know, doing its job as the fourth estate to inform the public about what's going on. And I do think that, you know, like we talked about a couple of weeks ago in regards to Reagan and that era of how things have changed. And in terms of just, you know, like the fairness doctrine and what we allow our news media to say to us and what we expect of them in terms of informing us of, you know, public policy, it has just really come such a long way and in a bad way over the last 30 years. And so I think our focus is really going to have to be taking back control of our media, because that is where so much of this misinformation is being spread, and it's hard to actually get a handle on it until you actually, you know, stop the hole, you know, close the leak.
And we've got to stop, you know, not talking to each other. I mean, to me, that's the ultimate. We've got to start talking to each other again. Jane, I appreciate the time. Always great talking with you. Good stuff. I look forward to next week.
All right. Absolutely. Have a great week.
Terrific. Great stuff. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around and listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Have a talk.
Right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.